chicken trolls, the bottled water, and the basket of hot muffins. Seconds later, Langdon was speeding away on a private access road. So this is how the other half lives. As the driver gunned the car up Windsock Drive, he consulted his passenger manifest and placed a quick call. "This is Beltway Limousine," the driver said with professional efficiency. "I was asked to confirm once my passenger had landed." He paused. "Yes, sir. Your guest, Mr. Langdon, has arrived, and I will deliver him to the Capitol building by 7 p.m. "You're welcome, sir." He hung up. Langdon had to smile. No stone left unturned. Peter Solomon's attention to detail was one of his most potent assets, allowing him to manage his substantial power with apparent ease. A few $1 billion in the bank doesn't hurt either. Langdon settled into the plush leather seat and closed his eyes as the noise of the airport faded behind him. The U.S. Capitol was a half hour away, and he appreciated the time alone to gather his thoughts. Everything had happened so quickly today that Langdon only now had begun to think in earnest about the incredible evening that lay ahead. Arriving under a veil of secrecy, Langdon thought, amused by the prospect. 10 miles from the Capitol building, a lone figure was eagerly preparing for Robert Langdon's arrival. Chapter 2. The one who called himself Moloch pressed the tip of the needle against his shaved head, sighing with pleasure as the sharp tool plunged in and out of his flesh. The soft hum of the electric device was addictive, as was the bite of the needle sliding deep into his dermis and depositing its dye. "I am a masterpiece." The goal of tattooing was never beauty. The goal was change. From the scarified Nubian priests of 2000 BC to the tattooed acolytes of the Cybele cult of ancient Rome, to the Moko scars of the modern Maori, humans have tattooed themselves as a way of offering up their bodies in partial sacrifice, enduring the physical pain of embellishment and emerging changed beings. Despite the ominous admonitions of Leviticus 19:28, which forbade the marking of one's flesh, tattoos had become a rite of passage shared by millions of people in the modern age, everyone from clean-cut teenagers to hardcore drug users to suburban housewives. The act of tattooing one's skin was a transformative declaration of power, an announcement to the world. I am in control of my own flesh. The intoxicating feeling of control derived from physical transformation had addicted millions to flesh-altering practices. Cosmetic surgery, body piercing, bodybuilding, and steroids, even bulimia and transgendering. The human spirit craves mastery over its carnal shell. A single bell chimed on Moloch's grandfather clock, and he looked up. 6:30 p.m. Leaving his tools, he wrapped the Kiryu silk robe around his naked 6'3" body and strode down the hall. The air inside this sprawling mansion was heavy with the pungent fragrance of his skin dyes and smoke from the beeswax candles he used to sterilize his needles. The towering young man moved down the corridor past priceless Italian antiques. A Piranesi etching, a Savonarola chair, a silver Bugarini oil lamp. He glanced through a floor-to-ceiling window as he passed, admiring the classical skyline in the distance. The luminous dome of the U.S. Capitol glowed with solemn power against the dark winter sky. "This is where it is hidden," he thought. "It is buried out there somewhere." Few men knew it existed, and even fewer knew its awesome power, or the ingenious way in which it had been hidden. To this day, it remained this country's greatest untold secret. Those few who did know the truth kept it hidden behind a veil of symbols, legends, and allegory. "Now they have opened their doors to me," Moloch thought. 3 weeks ago, in a dark ritual witnessed by America's most influential men, Moloch had ascended to the 33rd degree, the highest echelon of the world's oldest surviving brotherhood. Despite Moloch's new rank, the brethren had told him nothing. Nor will they, he knew. That was not how it worked. There were circles within circles. Brotherhoods within brotherhoods. Even if Moloch waited years, he might never earn their ultimate trust. Fortunately, he did not need their trust to obtain their deepest secret. My initiation served its purpose. Now, energized by what lay ahead, he strode toward his bedroom. Throughout his entire home, audio speakers broadcast the eerie strains of a rare recording of a castrato singing the Lux Aeterna from the Verdi Requiem, a reminder of a previous life. Malik touched a remote control to bring on the thundering Dies Irae. Then, against a backdrop of crashing timpani and parallel fifths, he bounded up the marble staircase, his robe billowing as he ascended on sinewy legs. As he ran, his empty stomach growled in protest. For 2 days now, Malik had fasted, consuming only water, preparing his body in accordance with the ancient ways. "Your hunger will be satisfied by dawn," he reminded himself, "along with your pain." Malik entered his bedroom sanctuary with reverence, locking the door behind him. As he moved toward his dressing area, he paused, feeling himself drawn to the enormous gilded mirror. Unable to resist, he turned and faced his own reflection. Slowly, as if unwrapping a priceless gift, Malik opened his robe to unveil his naked form. The vision awed him. "I am a masterpiece." His massive body was shaved and smooth. He lowered his gaze first to his feet, which were tattooed with the scales and talons of a hawk. Above that, his muscular legs were tattooed as carved pillars. His left leg spiraled, and his right vertically striated. Boaz and Jachin. His groin and abdomen formed a decorated archway, above which his powerful chest was emblazoned with the double-headed phoenix. Each head in profile, with its visible eye formed by one of Malak's nipples. His shoulders, neck, face, and shaved head were completely covered with an intricate tapestry of ancient symbols and sigils. "I am an artifact, an evolving icon." One mortal man had seen Malik naked 18 hours earlier. The man had shouted in fear, "Good God, you're a demon!" "If you perceive me as such," Malik had replied, understanding, as had the ancients, that angels and demons were identical, interchangeable archetypes, all a matter of polarity. The guardian angel who conquered your enemy in battle was perceived by your enemy as a demon destroyer. Malik tipped his face down now and got an oblique view of the top of his head. There, within the crown-like halo,